Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. I know it's been a while. I'm very excited. I have another very special guest with me today, Becca, and we are going to be talking about how to be more honest with yourself. Becca Ribbing is the author of the Clarity Journal and has been a coach for over a decade. She's on a mission to help people break out of the cycles of uncertainty and struggle that hold them back. She helps women going back and forth with a big, seemingly endless question of what to do next, so they can stop going around in circles and finally figure out what they truly want and create the clarity and momentum they crave. Gosh, that is so beautiful. Becca, hello and welcome. So grateful to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this.
Yay, me too. And what an amazing topic. I've actually been sort of reflecting a little bit on being honest with myself as I have recently gotten back into the whole staffing agency world, which is my professional background. And what really helped me to get there was being more honest. So this is a really great topic. I know it's going to resonate with a lot of people. So I also really love that among your areas of focus and expertise are self-care, along with being honest with yourself. And there's definitely a lot of overlap there. So I think it would be great if we can first talk a little bit more about self-care. And why is it that sometimes it feels like self-care should make us happier, but really it's just a band-aid because it's not getting at why we feel depleted in the first place?
Well, I really believe it is like a band-aid. Like, a band-aid's wonderful. A band-aid serves a purpose. If you've got a little teeny cut and you put a band-aid on it, it protects it. It gives it time to heal. And so if there's something that's going on in your life that's little, then self-care is really great because it gives you time to heal. It gives you time to calm down. It gives you time to reflect. However, if you got a big gaping wound, like emotional or physical, like a little band-aid isn't going to help because it just can't. Like, you need like a real bandage. You need to be stitched up. You need to pamper yourself a little bit more. And I think that a really big thing is that you need to know what's causing it. Like, if you're reopening it over and over again, then it's not going to help the way that it would help if it's just a little thing. And I find that a lot of people really focus on self-care when they are so depleted and they've already hit burnout and they are really just at their wit's end. They don't know what they want to do, or they're just feeling really stuck. And self-care is really hard. It's hard to move yourself through just through self-care. Like, if you're in one of those really difficult situations, difficult times of life, then you really have to go deeper than that. And I think a lot of us have only been trained to look at the surface. Like, throughout school, throughout, like, with our parents, it's always like, oh, shake it off. Oh, like, it's okay. Like, how many thousands of times as a kid were we told it's okay when it wasn't okay for us? Mm-hmm. And it's really hard because I am a parent and yet I still find myself doing that. And then I stop myself and validate, but it's just reflexive. And what you're feeling is telling you something. It's giving you a message about what's going on and how it's not working for you. And if you keep trying to suppress that message, if you keep trying to gloss over it, like, go get a massage, go have a box of chocolates. Like, we do both positive and negative things to try to do self-care. But I think the thing that got me really started on this topic is how many self-care articles came out at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, that was going to fix anything. Like, you're in the middle of a pandemic, you're stuck at home, either alone or with your family, either way, you're going crazy. Like, there's all this uncertainty. self-care isn't going to fix that uncertainty. It's not going to make something that is inherently not okay, okay. Mm. And it's almost like gaslighting, you know, it's like society's gaslighting. If we just do this, then we'll feel better. And it's like, no, like how many people have gone, had a massage and then come back out and like had their text messages blowing up from their boss. And that stress just comes right back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. So much of what you just shared resonated with me on such a deep level, especially when you said about like oppressing, you know, having mm-hmm. a lot of experience oppressing and suppressing emotions and feelings and like not really getting to the root does cause so many other things that then make it more challenging to realize like, hey, my battery is at like below the 1%, you know, like, it's like we, as you said, like the visual that came to mind is like when you see the battery, like we've all been there. I feel like you're watching a movie and the battery alert comes on. It's like 10%, 5%, 1%. And you just keep hitting okay. Cause you're like, I don't want to get up and go find a charger. Right. But it's so often that we wait too long before we plug in to recharge. And to your point, if we do wait too long before we hit recharge, we're not really solving like the core issue. There's so many things that you mentioned and now my brain is like 17 tabs just opened and I'm like, wait, go back to that. But that was kind of like the first visual that came to mind was like, just, you know, as cliche as it is to bring up the phone as the visual, but there really is so much truth in that. And then, you know, the like going and getting a massage and then feeling like, okay, there's this temporary relief. And then all of a sudden, like things go back. So, you know, understanding the why, because that was something that you mentioned, that word like really resonates with me. I sort of accidentally became TikTok famous, like doing this expression, but why? But that came to me very naturally because I now question why, like, why am I feeling this way? Why is this not really working for me? Why is this working for me? And taking an approach of like more reflection, a lot of the self-awareness and self-discovery can be scary and daunting because sometimes we don't want to go there because it's not always the most pleasant to figure out the why. But then the more that we put on band-aids, you're going to be covered in band-aids and there's still going to be things that are going to go through the band-aids, as you're saying.
Right. Exactly. And it's just so hard to start training ourselves to do it because we've been, as a kid, kind of reflexively taught not to. It really isn't easy to start switching into noticing because it's uncomfortable. Mm. The first time you really start to try to notice what your feelings are in a negative moment, it is uncomfortable, especially for women. I think differently for women and men. Like men have been trained that they should just not have emotions. So that's uncomfortable on a whole level. Mm. But for women, a lot of times we are told explicitly that our emotions are not rational. Mm. How many times have you heard in the media or in your own life, like, I would listen to you if you are being rational right now. And it's like, well, I am angry for a rational reason. Like, I am angry because you just disrespected me. I am angry because you were taking advantage of me. I am angry because this is an untenable situation and I need it to change. And you are telling me you will not change it unless I'm not angry about it. Mm. And that's really where that gaslighting bit comes in.
And that was actually, as you're talking, I was like, wait, this is one of the tabs that I had opened in my head was gaslighting, because I actually recently learned that you can gaslight yourself. And I didn't really like know that you could, because when you're being gaslit by someone else, there's a lot of ways that you're, you know, that we've sort of become more aware of what being gaslit by someone else looks like and what it means and some examples, but we gaslight ourselves all the time. And I didn't realize how often I was gaslighting myself. And that is absolutely, when it comes to self-care, I mean, I hear this all the time, whether it's clients, friends, et cetera, it's like, well, what's the difference between self-care and being like selfish? Or, you know, like, what if I don't really need to do those things because I like need to tend to other people? And it's like, we're diminishing our own selves and sort of like almost putting out that like thought, like, oh, I don't even really need it because I'm okay. Or I'm being too dramatic, or I'm being too emotional, or like for women, right? Like I'm on my period. And it's like, that, and then that also like can limit us from even looking into self-care. So sometimes it's like, we don't even know that we like have Band-Aids available. So that's kind of just like what's coming to mind.
Right. Well, and I think that we just like, it's like at certain levels, it's easier to just be like, okay, well, I'll go take a bubble bath. Like, and it's not getting at the heart of it. And your body is actively trying to tell you this situation is not safe. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is the biggest point. It's like your body is physiologically trying to give you a warning sign that this is not an okay situation for you. And the more that you ignore that, the more that you allow the situation to go on, like, you're just ending up digging yourself into a bigger hole.
Mm-hmm. And the word ignore kind of reminds me of like maybe signs. So I think if we can also talk a little bit about maybe, you know, and I know that I use the word signs loosely for those watching on YouTube right now, I'm putting it in air quotes because I understand that, you know, there's certain things it's like, it's not prescriptive and there's no like actual signs, but I guess, you know, when we're talking about maybe what are some of the things that make us realize that we're like not aligning with ways that self-care can actually like help serve us. So like, what are some of the ways that we can like identify?
Well, I think self-care itself can't really serve us until we actually have taken care of the big gaping wounds. So I would suggest that if you are trying to figure out what's going on, start noticing when you're snapping at your family or snapping at friends. I think that that's a big one that people often ignore because like, there's a reason why you're annoyed. Like you're snapping because, I mean, you're not totally being like out of hand probably, but you know that your emotional response is outsized from what happened. And a lot of times that is because the emotions have been bottled up from somewhere else. And where is that? And I think also, like, are you putting yourself last? Like, are you saying, I can't tell you how many women have told me that they aren't going to start looking for a new job right now. They'll start in 6 months after a project is over, because if they left their job now, it would hurt their coworkers. Mm. And it's just like, that's not okay. If you are this stressed about your job, staying in it for 6 months is just not okay. Like mm-hmm. if they aren't treating you well, even if it's not your coworkers that aren't treating you well, like if the company isn't treating you well, you need to leave. They wouldn't give you any notice. You certainly don't owe them 6 months. And it's not, it actually is detrimental. I think that we gloss over, ignore the fact that all of this cortisol that we're storing in our body when we stay in stressful situations is actually hurting our body. It's why our body is telling us that it needs to change.
Yeah, those are such great points. And a lot of what we're sharing is a great transition to talking more about being honest, I think, because in the example that you shared, which is such a great one, that, you know, if we are able to look at a scenario like, let's say someone at work who wants to stay for their coworkers or because they don't want to be seen as XYZ. I mean, there's an abundance of reasons. How can we be more honest with ourselves about how we're feeling, which can then, you know, serve us in a way to get to that root, like the why, to really help us overcome or to move on from whatever it is that's been really, you know, making us feel that kind of stress or overwhelm?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, since I wrote the Clarity Journal, I'm a big believer in journaling. Mm. I am a big believer in guided journaling, because if you're really far down that rabbit hole, you could start journaling tomorrow and it would probably either gloss over the problems. Like if you're having a hard time addressing the problems in the first place, it may be hard for you to do that on your own. Mm. Whereas when you're doing some form of guided journaling, it is helpful because it takes you out of your own mind and helps you see things in different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really powerful. I think also being able to really get outside of the problem as you see it and be able to take in the big picture, like what is going well, like what do you like about your job? Or what did you like about your job before it became chaotic or whatever? But also, like, what do you need to be happy? I think one of the things that always strikes me when I am working one-on-one with someone and I've got a new client, they will tell me all these wonderful stories and interesting stories about like how they got to this point. Mm-hmm. And as they're telling those stories, one of the things I'm looking for is their strengths. Like I'm hearing for what they do well, like what their strengths are. Mm-hmm. And I will eventually pause them and say, hey, so I am noticing that this has come up a couple times. Are you really aware that this is a strength of yours? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people get really quiet and be like, like, because we don't value our strengths because they come easy to us. Mm. We have been trained to really focus on the things we need to improve on. And we don't notice our strengths. And when we don't notice our strengths, it's really funny. A lot of times because it comes easy to us, we expect it to come easily to other people. And then we get annoyed that it's not coming easy to other people when they have their own strength too. Like mm-hmm. maybe their strength is micromanaging, but like for your coworkers and stuff, everybody has their own strengths and being able to like embrace it and feel really strong about, hey, this is my secret sauce. This is what makes me feel special makes it easier. I think on so many levels, to relax and to recognize your own value.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that resonates with me personally, because thinking back on all the times where I'm feeling depleted, I'm feeling disempowered, the one anchor is recognizing my strengths. And really that was looping this back to what I shared at the beginning of our soul chat is, when I was recognizing that recruiting, you know, because I've been recruiting for 8 years and I love being the bridge between people, and I'm a professional connector, and that's what I love to do. I have been much more honest with myself, especially during this extra time during COVID that we've had to really sit with ourselves and think, and looking at myself and being honest with myself is exactly what you're sharing, you know, and I'm sure this can resonate with a lot of our listeners, that I'm like, hey, Lizzie, you know, you're a really good recruiter and you really love people and you really love making connections and you really love talking. That this is like the job that makes the most sense. Like, yes, I still do life coaching and, you know, not as often this past year because of just being busy with other things, but that is what looking at myself and being honest with myself looks like, you know? And the strength highlighting is so key that, again, in my personal experience, was what helped sort of trigger in a good way the walk down honest with myself lane. So, you know, I would love to sort of dig deeper on that. And if you could sort of help us to understand, like, what does it mean to be more honest with yourself? And what does being more honest with yourself look like?
I think being more honest with yourself looks like not flinching. Not feeling something bad and like picking up the phone. I think at a certain level, it's become harder to be honest with ourselves. We have, as a society, you've gone through a lot of transformations that do make it easier, but in a very key regard, we have a constant distraction always right next to us. We don't have to do it. And it's a self-soothing mechanism. And so when we turn to the phone, instead of really like looking at it, it is ultimately self-soothing. It is an act of self-care, even if it's not an act of healthy self-care. And being able to see those trigger moments for yourself, like where you are shying away and where you are having a hard time, and being able to sit with it. And if that's really hard, I always have a hard, when I'm saying this, I always want to give the caveat. I can say this for someone who's not going through PTSD or really serious depression or really serious anxiety. But if you truly can't do this, then you also need support in making it easier. I'd really suggest some sort of somatic therapy or EMDR, something that's going to actually help you process, because you're physically wanting to run away from it. Like you're physically wanting, like when you feel that sensation for wanting to look at the phone to like get rid of the thoughts, like it is, like if you actually sit with it, it's physical. Like your blood pressure might go up. You're probably not breathing well. Your chest might get tight. And the only way to work through those responses is to actually allow yourself to work through those responses, however that needs to happen, whether it's with a professional or by yourself. And I think it's really important to work through them, because it just holds us back. We aren't hurting anyone but ourselves. And it's kind of funny. I work with people of all ages. So I have people that I've worked with that are well into their 60s who are trying to figure out what they want to do. And I think it's easy when we're younger to be like, we have all the time in the world. And then there hits a moment where you switch from we have all the time in the world to I don't have enough time, so there's no point in getting started. And that's actually a harder period of time to overcome. And so I just always am very cognizant of the more you can do this now, the more you're setting yourself up for a much happier elderhood, you know, because it's really sad when you're trying to figure out, maybe I shouldn't say it. It can be very empowering to figure it out in your 50s, but there is also a wistfulness for the fact that you didn't figure it out earlier.
Yeah. And I think that where I would love to dive deeper on is, you know, learning from you, from your experience, from what you've been, you know, sharing with, you know, folks that you work with, is, you know, how are we able to start facing things head on so that we're able to be honest, to almost align those self-care practices that are no longer those temporary band-aids, but rather, you know, we're working through those harder things, the things that are more challenging head on. We are getting to the root and then using self-care as a way of like really complementing that is a bit more, I guess, and I'm curious to hear what your feedback is to it. Do you think that when you sort of get to that place, is self-care more a matter of sustainability versus like the band-aid? So I think that was two questions in one. Sorry.
I feel like eventually, like the more you take care of all the stuff that's going on underneath the surface, the more it's not really self-care, it's just self-love. And like, because when we aren't loving ourselves, we overschedule ourselves. We allow other people to add all these big rocks into our day, and then we don't have time. And so we talk about self-care as like a bubble bath or a glass of wine or going for a run or taking a meditation. But all that stuff is just things you should be doing to take care, like literally just to take care of yourself, literally to give yourself space. And when you hit the point where that self-care doesn't feel like it's a like life vest being chucked at you, like where you've been tossed off a boat and someone's handing you a life vest, instead it's just like, oh, sure, of course I'm going to do this. This feels good and I want to feel good. I think that's where the shift really happens, where it's not trying to like sustain you, like get you through this really difficult time, and just is something that you deserve. And I don't know. I mean, I think that people will argue like, of course you deserve self-care, But I think that if you're sitting here thinking like, oh, I really need something for me, then you really need something for you, but you need to go deeper. Like you need to really like address what it is underlying it, whether it's a relationship or work or whatever. I mean, and it's hard. Pandemic, like it's been stressful for a lot of people. You know, it may mm-hmm. not be something within your control, but oh, I don't know. So I'm a big believer in meditation. I love meditation, and I'm also a believer that our Western society makes it totally overly complicated and scares people away from it. I learned how to meditate when I was 12, and I learned from a 13-year-old girl. I was living in New Jersey at the time, and she was from California, had long blonde hair, and spoke like a valley girl. And she was the coolest thing ever. And so she was like, I don't remember any other bit. She was visiting her aunt. I don't remember anything else from this week besides her sitting down with me. We were at her aunt's kitchen table and we were having this really long conversation, but she told me about how I think a monk came into her school and taught them how to meditate.
Ooh.
And so my takeaway from this was you sit cross-legged, you put your hands on your knees, and you just follow your breath. You follow it going in and you follow it going back out, and you can visualize it. And it was just such a beautiful way to learn to meditate because there's no rules. You just flow with it. Like, and I think that meditation teachers, I've never met a meditation teacher that wouldn't have agreed with anything I just said. And yet, when we're teaching adults, we have to complicate it. Like those instructions took all of 2 minutes, and we need to fill up a 60-minute space. And that 60-minute space scares people and it makes it inaccessible. And it also oftentimes misses the point, because a lot of times what the next set of instructions is that you, like if you're learning from an adult, is that you, like as you're breathing, you let go of any thoughts. But we are already doing that over and over again. We are already trying to let go and suppress thoughts all the time. You letting go and suppressing thoughts is something that comes reflexively to you. What you really need to be doing is noticing them and non-judgmentally noticing them, and then like allowing the breath to take them away, not actively trying to let them go. And I think that that is like, when you were asking about like, how do we get to that point? I do think that the more we can get there to that point of where we can notice what is going on, breathe and relax into it or allow it, and not be so intense about what our response is to it. I think that is the point at which we can allow the self-care to really also be effective, because we can allow ourselves then, if our boss sends us 20 texts in an hour, to come back to that breath and to not allow that person's issues to create a reflexive response in us.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Yeah. And one thing that sounds like it also is coming back full circle is that it almost sounds like that ability to reflect, like it can help us with being honest with ourselves as well. You know, one thing about self-care practices that, you know, I, again, personally have noticed with myself, and curious to hear if this resonates with you or with our listeners, but I think that one other element adding on to what you said, that we sort of overcomplicate things with adults, is this need of like doing certain things that are classified as self-care. And if it doesn't speak to you or resonate with you or something that you identify with your own life and with your own personality and way of coping and managing, it just doesn't necessarily offer the same kind of benefit, or it doesn't, you know, impact you in the same way, that it's okay to be honest with yourself that it just isn't for you. You know, so for me personally, I don't know why I've been trying so hard to get into meditation or get into yoga. And I've like tried, you know, like I feel like I want to do those things, but then what I find when I'm honest with myself just comes more natural is working out. Like I have come to find that working out is my form of meditation. And, you know, I do stretches before and after. So that's, it's not really yoga, because I also do now stretch at least once a week. But my point is that like very, very kind of tying back to something else that you mentioned about like how our strengths come so easy to us, that we almost think like everyone must be able to do this, or like it comes so easy that we don't have that sense of awareness that, hey, this is a strength of mine and I need to take the moment to celebrate it. I think in the same way, when it comes to self-care activities that do just resonate with us, or that we love to do more than other things, then it can also aid in helping us realize the why. It can aid us in not having it just be the band-aid, but the solution, because we're no longer feeling the sense of pressure or stress. Like as soon as I gave myself the permission to be like, you know what, maybe meditation and yoga isn't something that is serving you for right now. Not to say that it won't ever, but maybe for right now, it's just not. So then I have come to find like, well, then what does give me a sense of, you know, comfort and helps me to like get through things? It's like working out. Like I really enjoy being physical in my exercises, whether it's like doing high intensity interval or strength training or doing things outside like biking or whatever. And I have a lot of like comfort and I get a lot from that, but it took me being honest with myself to get to a place where I can now show up for myself in a more powerful way.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because when I was talking about like different self-care things you could do, I said running and then I cringed. I hate running. Like a lot of people use it for self-care, but a lot of people think what they're doing is self-care when they go run. And it's like, but if it's not like freeing for you, some people, when they are running, they feel like they're flying, right? They feel like their soul is being released. If it doesn't feel like that to you, it's not actually self-care. It's just another obligation. Like, mm-hmm. And you should take care of your body. Like, I'm not saying that there's not a reason to do it anyway. However, it doesn't fall under self-care if it's a struggle. And for you, for meditation, I would say I'd be super curious. Like, have you ever tried to just meditate for 3 minutes?
Yes. And then I get bored, if I'm being honest. Right.
So, and I think that like, that's part of the overcomplicating it, is a lot of times people are like, oh, I need to meditate for 20 minutes. I need to meditate for half an hour. I will win if I meditate for an hour. And it's not like literally 60 seconds is useful. And so, not that I'm saying you should, I wouldn't consider it self-care regardless for you if it's not your thing. But if anyone's listening to this and they're like, I don't do meditation, I'm like, try it for 2 minutes. Like try not even trying for longer than 2 minutes, just try only doing it for 2 minutes and see if you can start. Cause there is use beyond the self-care for mindfulness and meditation, because it does help you notice like what's going on, and it kind of integrates. Like if you're paying attention to your whole body, you don't really spend a lot of time paying attention to your whole body and your thoughts. I would argue you probably do while you're working out too. So you're probably having that same experience, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just really important that like mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that just accepting that it looks different for everyone. You know, I think that at the end of the day, that is the beauty of all of this, is that there isn't a cookie cutter, one size fits all. Everyone has to do and say the same things, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it really does look different for everyone. And I think that this truth, you know, can really set a lot of people free from the stress or the burden, or, you know, trying to have it the right way. Cause I know that that's something that I have struggled with, you know, constantly figuring out, is this the right or the wrong way, or the right or the wrong? And a lot of what I've learned in my life coaching is, you know, using instead of right and wrong, using empowering or disempowering. So is this something that empowers you, or is this something that disempowers you? And all of a sudden it's such a shift, because it no longer becomes about you're good or you're bad, which again, tying back to what we said about society and just the way in which our culture glorifies, talks about things, you know, whatever. There is so much of that, that it's like, you did good, you did bad. You were, you know, like, again, as kids, right? You're a good girl, you're a bad boy. Like, you know, and it really, it is so wild that even as we're adults, there is still like an element of like PTSD from like having this expectation thrown on us, which, you know, doesn't help when we hear about what you should and shouldn't do. And then I love how you're saying that, like, what's most important is, how does this feel? You know, so we're no longer coming from a place of obligation or right and wrong, but rather from a place of like, how does this help you? How does this serve you? How does this make you feel?
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. And I think just sort of like, you know, as a cherry on top, as we're wrapping up, you know, what are some more effective ways that we can self-care? Are you able to sort of describe for us what that could look like, that, you know, gives us energy versus taking it away?
I think that really recognizing what brings you flow. And like kind of going back to what you were talking about, like really understanding what it is that makes your heart sing. Like when I was describing what it feels like to someone who runs and runs as a true act of self-care, well, what is it that brings you that sense? I think that a lot of us have really lost our creative side. Like, you know, we may knit, you know, it's October when we're recording this. I don't know when it's going to go live, but like a lot of my friends are sending me pictures of like the yarn they're buying right now.
Aww.
But it's like, I think that there are a lot of self-care things that children do that adults kind of forget about. Like,
ooh.
Do you love to paint? Do you love to knit? Do you love to work with your hands? Clay, like working with clay is a really amazing, like just tactile, soothing, like you can just do abstract art. I think that would be the one that I would say that a lot of people don't really think about. I mean, everyone knows about the bubble bath and the glass of wine and the, like going and hanging out with your friends at a bar. But I would really invite you to not just go binge watch 6 episodes of your favorite show on Netflix, but to do something that like brings that creative energy or that sense of like expansion and expansiveness.
Ooh. Oh my gosh, Becca, you just gave me goosebumps. Oh my God. I'm so glad I asked that question. And I'm so grateful for your beautiful and empowering response, because that, oh my God, like chills, literally. Wow. Yes. 1,000,000% yes. I actually bought myself like an adult swear word, coloring book, and like bought myself a bunch of colored pencils. And I have to say, again, just like speaking from my personal perspective and my experience, is that I have actually reconnected with my creative side. So the fact that you are saying this is like also like, you know, just so great and making me do little shimmies over here. Because, you know, one of the things that I also was honest with myself about was when I was in college, I loved creating, like, even if it wasn't a physical thing, I loved color coding my planner and creating schedules and organizing. And, you know, I have not been giving enough of those things to myself. And recently, you know, as I again have been working through like the harder, like, but why am I feeling this way and all of that, it really is because I've sort of been depriving myself of things that like give me joy. And you sort of, again, as you said, like you lose sight of what brings you joy. So the goal is to bring an awareness to those things. And again, for me as like a big, you know, HSP empath, I feel everything. I have a lot of feels. When I can reconnect with myself, celebrate my strengths, you know, be honest with myself, and then talk about like what is really going on behind the closed doors, under the surface, whatever you want to say, I start to feel better, like not instantaneously by any means. Like this is, you know, of course, like, and as you said, this is, you know, not necessarily considering like those that are really struggling with like, you know, depression and things like that. But it's like when you are in those moments, when you aren't in like depression or, you know, all of that, it's like, you start to recognize, oh my gosh, like I need to act now or it could get worse. I know that that is like true for myself as well. And this like being honest, I think is like the glue. I think that's kind of what's coming to me right now is like being honest with yourself is the glue between like active self-care that serves you, isn't just a band-aid and helps you, and like being on, like feeling just like empowered and aligned with yourself and all of that. I think that that's kind of like the visual.
I love that.
Oh my
gosh. What came to me while you were talking about that is like, I just thought of finger painting would probably be a really good act of like getting connected with yourself again.
Ooh.
And like I could see it being somewhat triggering because you're making messes, but like it's tactile and physical and like has the, like, I think that actually could be really good. I'm going to go whip out my kids' finger paints and try it.
Well, I love that. And you know, some things that I really do enjoy when it comes up in Found Family podcast episodes is like leaving our audience with little challenges or in invitations. You know, it doesn't have to be like a challenge, like a fitness challenge. My mind goes to that word, but like more of just like an invitation to try something that we've talked about in this episode. So, you know, if coloring, if finger painting, if clay, if Play-Doh. I mean, how fun was Play-Doh to work, you know, to do as a kid?
Play-Doh's like, awesome.
I agree. And it's very much like, it's sort of like tapping back into the awe-like of a, you know, that childlike awe and mm-hmm. having this very awe-like wonder about things, or the kid in the candy store expression that like, you know, really can help you to sort of expand. Like, I love the words that you've been using. So yeah, I mean, I would love to invite everyone listening to, you know, like just consider and take this as an invitation, like consider what you may want to reconnect with or what sort of like creative thing you might do that can, that like speaks to you.
Anyway, that sounds awesome.
Yay. Oh my gosh, Becca, you are wonderful. Thank you on behalf of our planet for all the work that you are doing and putting out into this world. Please share with all of us where we can find you on all things social so that our Found Family can love and support you and all the things, and also your Clarity Journal, which by the way, it's going to be linked in the description of the podcast. And if you're watching on YouTube, it's going to be down below in the description, all of Becca's social media, but please share with us where are you and where we can find the Clarity Journal.
So I'm at BeccaRibbing.com. So Becca is BECCA. Ribbing is RIBBING, just in case you're not looking, not the type of person that looks at the show notes. And you can find the Clarity Journal on Amazon.
Amazing. Great. And we look forward to other things that you might be cooking behind the scenes, and very excited to just have you here and celebrate all of these discussions. Like, I mean, it's just, I'm on cloud 9. So thank you so much for being with us. It's been such a joy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.